Agenda Paper 11 is about the meaning of high-quality corporate bonds. In response to this paper, we received two documents prepared by a group of European companies. We included their proposal in the example 2 in Appendix C of this staff paper. The issue is whether corporate bonds with a rating lower than AA can be considered to be high-quality corporate bonds. In paragraph 10 to 15 of this paper, we provide an analysis of whether, in our view, the reference in paragraph 83 of ICE 19 to high-quality corporate bond is a relative or an absolute concept. We think that paragraph 83 implies that the term high-quality is an absolute concept, and that this is confirmed by the predominant practice to use AA-rated corporate bonds to determine the discount rate. Therefore, we think that to introduce a relative concept to high-quality corporate bonds, we need to amend paragraph 83, and that the potential effect of such an amendment could be significant for the reasons mentioned in paragraph 15 of the paper. In this paper, we also provide a pros and cons analysis on whether high-quality corporate bonds should be a relative or an absolute concept, and we illustrate the possible options to address this issue. We identify three options. The first one is to stop the project, issuing a tentative agenda decision similar to the November 2012 IFRIC update. The second option is to develop implementation guidance on the basis that high-quality corporate bonds is an absolute concept. In option two, we need to establish the reference point for high-quality corporate bonds, so the committee should decide whether the reference point should be, for example, AA or single A. The third option is to amend ICE 19 to state that high-quality corporate bonds is a relative concept, and so the discount rate should be determined using the highest quality corporate bonds. In option three, we think that we need to set a floor. For example, bonds rated below B cannot be used to determine the discount rate, and we need to provide guidance on when an entity can use lower quality bonds. In Appendix C of this paper, we provide some example of this guidance. We recommend to stop the project because we are concerned that the committee cannot reach a consensus on a timely basis on this issue. We ask the committee members if they agree with our recommendation and, if they disagree, which their preferred option is. Thank you.
Okay, given that I had another senior moment and forgot to ask her before, Sandy, will you want to open the ball on this one?
Oh. Well, I guess I don't think that it is a relative concept. I think it's an absolute concept. I'm sorry, I was grabbing the paper and I'm collecting my thoughts here. I think that I understand the difficulty of proceeding, but I'm most concerned by, in the appendix, the wording where it says that the entity shall apply judgment, et cetera, et cetera, because I think that while that's true, there's no additional requirement to disclose, in fact, that an exception has been taken. And I went back and looked at the disclosure requirements in, I think it's paragraph 144 in IAS 19. And it doesn't, it's, you know, very high level description of disclosures, but in this case, it's an exception from what the requirement is. And I think if you're a user of the financial statements, and you, this exception is taken, that you use judgment. I shouldn't say exception. I should say that you use this judgment and that you apply something other than AAA or AA because it doesn't exist. Then I think that there needs to be some indication of that in the financial statement.
Thank you, Sandy. Luca, are you on the line yet? Okay, we've lost Luke. Tony?
I think with this one, I agree with the staff's recommendation to stop the project. I think some of the questions that are raised by trying to provide further guidance on what discount rate should be used are too broad, and they get to a more fundamental question of what are discount rates for generally, or what are discount rates for in IS 19. So I would support stopping the project with an agenda decision. I guess I wonder if there are a couple of ways in which the agenda decision might be tweaked to help people. So, for example, I agree with Sandy that the notion of the discount rate is an absolute notion for the reasons that the team has identified in the paper. And I think it might be helpful to explain that in the agenda decision. And secondly, while there is judgment involved in setting the discount rate, it might be helpful to explain that you wouldn't expect that judgment to change from period to period, absent there being something that would fundamentally change the way the high-quality corporate bonds are determined. And so I would support it, but I just wonder if a couple of tweaks we might make to the agenda decision.
Andrew?
Yeah, I'm very much in the same place as Tony. It feels slightly uncomfortable to come to my first meeting and say stop the project when I was never involved at the start of the project, but nonetheless, given where we are, that seems to be the most appropriate place to be. I think we need more. I either need to wait for the outcome of the broader project on discounting generally, or ask the board to clarify the objective of discounting more narrowly for IAS 19, but that we have got the broader project. So perhaps that will provide some firmer backing for what we do. And I agree that we also need to look at whether we can just make the agenda decision a bit more robust to try and narrow down the extent of diversity, really building on what Tony suggested. I'd go a bit further and just be explicit that provided the market in high-quality bonds remains deep, then a decline in the number of AAA or AA-rated bonds should not cause a change in the methodology in isolation.
Okay. Charlotte?
I don't agree with the staff recommendation. I thought it was too big an issue, an urgent issue, when it was brought to us, but to just stop it now. I did actually support going to trying to define what the discount rate was the last time. I understand why we went for this version. I think the standard's a bit unclear at the moment. It probably says it's an absolute method. I would prefer going to a relative method because I think it's a more logical and sensible outcome and would be more consistent year on year for reporters. I also think by disclosing your methodology and your estimates, you can get around the issues that Sandy raised. I'm also concerned as where we would be if we stopped the project. Are we still in the area where we'd be reverting to government bonds of a lower quality than the corporate? Yeah, would that problem still be there?
John?
Yeah, I already expressed the view that I think the concept is the problem, and the solution would be to for a larger project to define the rate that should be used. Short of that, of course, I agree with the staff. I think the way the principle is written right now, it's an absolute concept, and therefore going to a relative concept, I think would need a change to the definition, simply because if I understand properly the relative concept would end up depending in year over year with a different level of credit risk in the population that you select. So you prioritize a large number of element over a common credit risk in the population, or limited credit risk in the population. So I struggle with reconciling the relative concept with the principle that is outlined in IAS 19. So where you should not have investment risk and actuarial risk and the credit risk should be limited. Having said that, I agree with the staff. Submission, I think we should remove we say it's here are the principles of 19, use your judgment, use consistency in the application of the principle. But by the way, you know, use AA and AAA. I think it will be read this way. So I think this paragraph that says the interpretation committee further noted that predominant practice is X and Y, although it's true, I think shouldn't be there because it's it's a rule that, you know, it's not embedded in IFRS anywhere. So I think we should not go there.
Okay. We've had several suggestions offline on the wording of the agenda decision. I propose that if we can get the broad outlines right, then we will share that with you, subject to your approval. Joanna?
On the basis of us last time looking at the wider narrow scope amendment and saying that we thought it was too wide, and therefore coming back to what is there, I think we, in my view, support the staff and that we almost have no option but to stop the project and do an agenda decision. But in my mind, it is very clear that it is, you know, from the analysis here, that it is an absolute concept and the agenda decision should reflect that. I certainly don't support option three, which is looking at the relative concept and moving forward, because to me that is coming back to actually looking at the whole area around, just because I do see that as something fundamentally different, so that is opening it up again, in which case I'd open it up wider than that. So to me, if we're keeping it narrow, it's got to be your recommendation and appropriately worded agenda decision. But having said that, sorry, I do support in the long term actually damn well looking at this. I do the bigger project.
Martin?
I have some concerns to stop the project now. I mean, even if we would, as a majority, agree that we are not talking about a relative but about an absolute concept, we haven't solved the issue in praxis. And, I mean, I can understand that one has some difficulties to make a reference to rating agencies. However, what is not clear for me is the interest rate should not be risk-free. There should be a specific risk component inherent in the interest rate. And the question is open, how much or what is the measure of this interest rate? Could we probably focus on a probability of default or something else? I mean, learning from IRS 9, we are also now classifying instruments with regard to the probability of default. Could we learn something from this, or even a little bit more concrete what is meant without having the reference to rating agencies?
Would you, I just for my purposes of my notes, I know you don't want to quit. Do you embrace absolute or relative?
I've no concept so far for a relative measure. I mean, based from the history of the standard, it was never discussed. So what then we would really open up a very broad issue, and I'm not sure whether we have the competence to do so or whether the board should do so. On the other hand, I mean, if we always have a specific link towards US GAAP, my interest would be, is the FASB currently discussing the topic as well, or is the IRSB or the Interpretation Committee the only one? So in terms of convergence, should we, well, open an ear what's ongoing?
My impression is this isn't an issue in the United States because they have a deep market in AA. Not an issue. Scott. Marie, I haven't forgotten you, but I'm going to hit you.
A few thoughts, comments, maybe a question or two. First of all, I think it's clear it's an absolute concept. Even those who support a relative concept put a floor on it. So they indicate there's a measure of absoluteness in it anyways. I think it, as drafted, it's clearly meant to be an absolute concept. So if we do stop the project, I would
want to make that clear in the agenda decision. If we do make that clear, I wonder if, having done that, it's an issue that we can then let regulators deal with as they see situations in their markets. And of course, I come to that question in part because I think it was the regulators that prompted this coming to us. I know ESMA has made some comments to kind of tamp down some of the push to change things as of year end 12/31/12. And in the U.S., obviously, this issue was dealt with by the regulator a long, long time ago, maybe 7 or 8 chief accountants ago, fairly quickly. But I think it was dealt with by the regulator in part because it was viewed as an issue of, you know, sort of enforcing the application of the principle rather than defining the principles. And if we think that the principle is clear, that it's an absolute measure of high quality rather than a relative one, can we then leave it to the regulators to deal with? And I guess that's kind of where my question comes in, maybe for Julie and Marie, if that would be sufficient to help them in their work. And then I will confirm that this is not an issue currently in the U.S. I think there's two reasons. One, there is a deep market in AA, but I will tell you that I did run into situations where some companies, say companies the size of General Motors with a pension plan that's actually bigger than the company, actually, if there was a time in the past that if you added up their defined benefit pension promises, it was larger than the AA bond market in the U.S. I'm not sure if it was literally larger, but at least as far as quoted ones of appropriate length, they actually ran into the situation where their defined benefit obligation was bigger than the market for AA. So they could have made an argument that the market isn't deep enough. But the other reason why it's not an issue in the U.S. is because the mark was set at AA a long time ago, and people have gotten comfortable with dealing with it that way. The question doesn't really get asked, can we or should we move off of AA? AA has been in place and, you know, has been the rule for so long. Everybody knows how to deal with it. Everybody accepts it. People know how to analyze it that way, and they just move along. It doesn't really become an issue. Now, you do get plenty of issues regarding whether companies are actually choosing discount rates that track AA, but that's a different story.
This is Sandy. Can I interject something? I guess I'm confused by the notion that this wouldn't be applicable to a U.S. company following U.S. GAAP. I understand that the U.S. market is deep, but if they have a pension in a foreign country and there's no AA, then they actually, in theory, would have a bigger issue because they have a very bright line. It just may not be material, but many multinational companies have these benefit plans in the same jurisdictions that we're having these conversations about, don't they?
Correct. In general, what I've found is that even for U.S. companies that have pension plans abroad, the size of the U.S. liability is far bigger, and so that is the much more material number. Where I've run into it before with clients, they derive a AA rate in foreign jurisdictions if they need to.
Okay, we're going to do Fei Long, Lawrence, Kaz, John, Reinhardt, and then regulatory corner over here, and then we're going to stop because we've done enough. Fei Long?
Declined to support the staff recommendation to stop the project. Obviously, both option 2 or 3 will bring greater clarity and consistency. Why option two may will result by creating a rule that does not exist. Option three does not seem to be consistent with IAS 19, but amendment the standard will result in fundamental change. If we decide to go ahead, I will prefer to take option two. But I guess both options, the committee may not easy to reach a conclusion, no matter option two or three.
Ron?
My preference would be that the OISB takes on the project to define what the discount rate is and what we are trying to achieve with that discount rate, and to be dealt with as a matter of urgency, because we are talking about billions here. So I would have seen this as a priority project for the OISB to deal with. So that is my preference. Now, because we won't get this, and because I believe that effectively option two and option three may be going beyond, or might be setting rules, might be going beyond what the text is today, I have to resolve myself to go for option one. Even if I'm not necessarily convinced that we will get to where we want to be with option one, even if we strengthen that rejection. You notice that for once I did not press my button amongst the first ones, because I wanted to listen to the others. I think I can go with, like many of us proposed, to specify that it is an absolute notion. Probably you have more indication that it is an absolute notion, although I'm not necessarily fully convinced that in determining high quality, you may have various methodologies in determining high quality, how you do it. Why not relative? But I acknowledge that then you need that fallback position to say below a certain level, you don't do relative approach. And I'm not convinced by the argument that because in IAS 19 you have the requirement to revert to government bond when the market is not deep, this is a justification for an absolute notion. So we can try to strengthen. So if we say absolute, yes, we can refer to the current practice. I know that the current practice has been AA for many parts of the world. I cannot promise that the practice in the future is going to be AA.
Okay, Cass.
I basically support the staff recommendation, which is stop this project. That it, because I don't think we can get the consensus. We tried. I appreciate the staff efforts, but I don't think we can reach the consensus with this committee. And I understand this could be the broader project where ISB needs to take, but I think we just leave it for now. And I disagree to add some more kind of additional guidance in this rejection, because it's kind of add some more interpretation in there. I think this is a good writing for entity shall require judgment, and discount rate we have to disclose anyway, and whatever the users read that discount rate as something compare, if the company disclosed something odd, I think we have to explain anyway. So I think we, to some extent, we can kind of keep the consistency to some extent. So that's why I understand we want to kind of resolve and propose some solution to the market, but I think we just leave it as a company's judgment.
Okay, Reinhardt. And then John.
I agree with staff recommendation to stop the project. I think what is really critical is that the ISB, as others have said, continue and make as a high priority the project on discount rates, because I think part of what we're struggling with is the lack of a fundamental underlying principle, and so I'm concerned that if we continue on, we'll come up with a rule. And so, I agree with staff on the project. With respect to the agenda decision, I believe it's very, very important to be clear as to the view of the committee as to whether absolute or relative is appropriate. My view, reading the staff paper, is that it's appropriate to be absolute. And I think the guidance or the agenda decision should be clear in that respect, because if I'm in the a relative camp, I can read the agenda decision and use that to support where I want to go. You know, using judgment, being consistent over time. I've seen some papers where on the relative concept where they allege that that's exactly what they're doing. So that, in a nutshell, is where I would stand.
John?
I mean, I have concerns about stopping the project. Like Charlotte, I was in the last time in the camp that thought we were sort of heading the right direction with the staff proposals at the last meeting, but now we're back dealing with the narrow question we were asked, which is what is high quality? I don't think we're answering that question. I think the discussion about absolute relative is actually answering a question of is it high or higher? Well, I think the standard's quite clear. It's high quality, and that to me means absolute. It's not higher quality, which would be relative. Therefore, I don't think any amendment is needed to the standard for it to confirm it's an absolute notion. But that's not the question we were asked. The question we were asked is what's high quality? I don't know that a basis for interpreting that going forward is, oh, well, you've got to jump through all these hoops in order to change what you were doing before. That means in 10 years' time, someone's going to say, well, what have I been doing for 10 years? That must be the continued, I must continue with that methodology in order to define high quality. It seems to me we could have and should be working harder to perhaps notions like Martin said about probability of defaults, try and determine what high quality might actually mean that isn't linked to someone else's rating mechanism and someone else's method of determining high quality. So if we are going to stop the project, I think we need to have a more robust agenda decision, which links very firmly to the requirements of paragraph 84, to what the requirements are to be included in the discount rate and what's not to be included in the discount rate. And if people feel that confirmation is needed, that it's an absolute notion, then that we should put that in there as well. I personally don't think it's required. I think it's pretty clear.
John, IOSCO, and then we're going to quit. We're starting to cover the same ground over and over again.
Yeah, well, I don't want to come back on this issue, but by stopping the project, are we dropping at the same time this issue of government bonds that are not high quality?
Yep.
And
yes. We decided that last time.
Oh, we did. Okay.
When we said we weren't going to try and go there. I'll let you guys decide which one of you goes first.
Yeah, in 2012, in Europe, we asked for a standstill to the issuers, saying, okay, IFRSCC is working on the subject, so just stay and do not move, and what you're doing at the moment at the discount rate. And so we think it's really important to have something for this year end, because it will not be possible just to ask issuers to wait again for something. So for us, it's better to have a rejection than nothing. So I think we can go with a rejection, but for it to be enforceable, I think it's quite important to be rather clear. And for us, it's an absolute level, so it should be stated in the rejection that it's absolute. And maybe the rejection can clarify that high quality means that there is hardly no credit risk or something like that, just to try to elaborate a bit more on this one. And we think it's important as well to not make any reference to a possible change, because if you open the door saying, okay, in some cases you can change, afterwards this will be really difficult to enforce. And we agree that disclosure might be relevant.
Julie?
I would just say if it's going to be rejected, I'd focus on right now it talks about using judgment. I think it's a question, judgment to do what? I think it's important that the rejection would state that, you know, the concept of high quality is not only a function of what you can readily observe. The concept of fair value is not in IFRS is not only a function of what you can readily observe, meaning if I can't readily observe transactions, I don't do fair value. So if I can't readily observe, you know, the trading, I think that doesn't mean that the concept of high quality goes out the door or is changed. I think, as Scott used the word derive, which I think is a good word, I think if it isn't readily observable, then you're faced with deriving it somehow. So you adjust your mechanics as opposed to adjusting the goal or the concept. And I think, so the judgment comes in essence, how to adjust your mechanics, not judgment in, you know, changing what the objective is.
Don, absolute last word.
Yeah, sorry, I just wanted to clarify that Agenda Paper 11A is going to be discussed afterwards.
Yes.
Because I think...
Oh, yes, no, we're getting there.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, Laurence, I really do want to cut this off. I think what I hear emerging from the discussion is what I would call approach 1.5. I heard a very clear majority say stop, but let's make sure everybody understands that absolute is the underlying premise. And as I mentioned, we have several suggestions on the wording of the agenda decision. I heard a couple of things I'd ask the staff to think about. Number one, the paragraph on that refers to specific ratings ought to go.
Should delete, yes.
Should be deleted. That the discussion of requires judgment needs to be thought about because we don't want to open the door to saying, well, my judgment is it's an absolute notion, but it's single B. We don't want to open the door to that, so we need to get that in. On that basis, I propose to have the staff redraft the agenda decision for review by the members. Probably won't be ready tomorrow. Leah has several topics on his plate. But we'll get it to you when we send you the draft update, obviously. And we'll ask for approval.
Just to...
Okay, let's take them one at a time. Sandy and then Laurence, really short, and then staff.
I agree with everything you've said, but I'd just like to reemphasize my earlier point that it is absolute that there is something, that there is a degree of judgment that's incorporated in something other than AA or AAA is used, that there needs to be some element of a disclosure of that. Like I can't stress the importance of that enough.
Well, are you suggesting adding a required disclosure? Because we cannot do that in an agenda decision.
Yeah, I know. I just feel like, well, I guess we'll see what this judgment says, but if you're applying judgment and the rule doesn't exist, you're applying judgment, you were saying it's absolute, we're saying applied judgment, I agree with your comment that it can't be triple B, but then people are going to use some sort of judgment that is other than AA, right?
No, that was not my implication. I think when I asked the staff to look at that language, I think that's one that had come up in some of the comments about needing to be more robust. And let us get that drafted and run it past everybody.
All right.
Laurence, and then Scott, and then...
It is on the process. I know that Leo has a lot of work to do, but I wonder whether it would be possible to have the draft by tomorrow, so that if we need to have a discussion all together, it is preferable that we have a discussion all together.
If it's that bad, we can't get it done tomorrow. My sense is that the staff needs to take some time to think about how they redraft, and I don't want to rush it. Scott?
I was just going to point out that there is a requirement already to disclose the significant actuarial assumptions.
Yeah.
We could certainly
observe that in the agenda decision, if that's at all helpful. Question is whether we can go beyond that and suggest that companies might also want to describe how they chose that rate. Because the disclosure requirement is the discount rate is 4.5%, period, right. The end. But I think what Sandy is getting at is might be useful for companies to say how they got that discount rate. I don't know if there's anything we can say in the agenda discussion. That's exactly what I'm getting at,
in the sense that I went back and looked at the disclosure requirement. I'm not disagreeing there's not a requirement to make a disclosure with respect to the discount rate. But what investors really want to know, in fact, I had this very conversation about something else, is when there's I'm not using my word correctly here, but an exception. I'm not using it correctly in an accounting sense, but when there is a deviation from what would normally be the rate chosen because of judgment or other circumstances, there needs to be additional consideration given to articulating that in fact it's not just that rate, but that there is some special circumstances with respect to how and why that was chosen, so that investors pay closer attention to it and that they ask a question if need be so that they understand. I mean, Laurence made a comment that this is very big numbers, that in fact they can make ask what in fact might be the consequence of using a different number, given they have some indication of the size of liability and the cash flows associated with the choice of that numbers, i.e., since we're not going to choose what rate and the company's going to choose a rate, investors are going to say, okay, well, I might want to choose something else and I'm going to change your market value because of it.
About the best that we can do is to admonish. We can say that, you know, in this circumstance, investors might find additional information useful and encourage it, but that's the most that we can do in an agenda decision. We can't impose a new requirement.
Agreed. I would just like to, in the confines of what we are capable of doing, I would like to articulate that is an important consideration to be made in making that disclosure.
Fine.
In that particular paragraph.
Yeah. I don't see anybody objecting to that.
Okay.
Okay. As much fun as this has been.
Wayne. Just in terms of our directions, the committee noted we wanted to remove the references to the ratings. Is that in that paragraph where it notes that the interpretations committee noted that predominant past practice refers to ratings, or is it? Can we keep the references to ratings in what the submitter?
The one that I had highlighted is the interpretations committee further noted.
Yes.
Thank you.
That's the paragraph that people wanted to delete. Okay. Now we go to the multiple currency, which is paper
11A. Agenda paper 11A is about a request to address explicitly, as part of the discount rate project, the issue of a regional market sharing the same currency. The issue is whether the basket of high-quality corporate bonds should be determined at a country level or at a currency zone level. We think that the basket of high-quality corporate bonds should be determined at a currency level, because paragraph 83 states that the currency and term of the bonds shall be consistent with the currency and the estimated term of the liability. In our view, the wording of paragraph 83 of IS 19 may be clarified by deleting the reference to countries. Consequently, we think that the Interpretation Committee should recommend the ASB to amend paragraph 83 to annual improvements. We ask the committee members if they agree with our recommendation and if they have any comments on the wording of our proposed amendment to IS 19.
Comments? This one's kind of a yes-no. You either do or you don't.
Well, this is Sandy. Can I start on this one?
Sure.
I agree with the proposal, but with respect to the wording, because we've replaced currency, the word current countries with currencies, the notion becomes becomes a question in the latter part of the sentence. If there's no high quality corporate bond rates, which government do you use? So is it the government? So, I mean, maybe that becomes less of an issue because you've created a wider population of bonds so that you have to use that less. But the wording of this sentence makes me question which government would I use, because currency and government are no longer one government, one currency. Otherwise, I agree with I don't disagree with the principle of what we're trying to do. I just think the sentence needs to change a little bit to clarify which government might need to be used.
Long?
The proposal makes sense in an economically stable environment. I just have a question for the staff that what happens if, in case of the currencies, say, in this worse situation, and what happens if the Eurozone is no more high quality bond, and which is government bond you're used for, it should be used?
I think that's the same question. Which government bond do you use as the reference?
We know this, but
IAS 19 doesn't specify what government bond to use if you're using the fallback. There is no deep market in high quality corporate bonds. I think that's been the case in many economies around the world where you have a state and federal government and you need to choose one or the other. I think that's an existing problem, but this paper does not address that.
Charlotte?
I just had two questions. I agree generally, but I think previously we said to the market to which the entity has access, and now the amendment doesn't require anyone to have access to it. And it's also whether the bonds are required to be issued in the currency of the corporate. So if the high-quality corporate bonds are assessed at Eurozone level, what about all the other corporates that may issue Euro bonds? Do they come into the equation?
Are there that many? I had a light flashing. Laurent?
Well, actually, I had the same problem as Sandy about whether, in the hypothetical case, that it would be concluded that the Eurozone doesn't have a deep market, which is not the current situation. I think that we're talking about a situation that only affects the Eurozone, because I don't know places around the world where you would have various jurisdictions having the same currency. So we're talking about a hypothetical case here. Effectively, I don't know whether you shall revert to local government bonds or whether you should look at government bonds issued at the Eurozone level. Effectively, it isn't clear. If you go for the local government bonds, this is going to open up the question about having mutually compatible assumptions for determining the discount rate, and particularly whether you should look at the Eurozone as a whole, because the other assumptions for salary increases, inflation, and so on would be local. So you just need to be prepared to respond to that type of argument that we will get undoubtedly in the comments we will receive on this issue.
Mark?
Yes, my point is similar than yours. However, it might be when we have no liquid market for corporate bonds. and we have the fallback solution to use government bonds. But compared to the government bonds, the corporate bonds have an even better rating. What would be the appropriate solution? We haven't addressed this here, but I'm pretty sure that if we are not trying to find a solution close by, this question will be on our table, well, three months from now on or so.
That's the issue we dropped last time.
Okay.
John and Tony?
Yeah, just two comments. I mean, I agree with the amendments, but there is a disconnect in paragraph 83 between currencies and government, because by taking out countries, there's now a disconnect, and I think that needs to be made clearer, because some governments do issue a currency, but in other places, there's actually a currency zone that's larger than the government. And the other thing is, I think there's sort of interchangeably the use of currencies and currency zone, and they're actually two different things. So it's unclear to me whether you look at all bonds issued in a currency are only bonds issued by corporates in a zone, and those might be actually two different things, because there's quite a big Eurobond market issued by corporates outside of the Eurozone. So I think the principle in IAS 19 is you look to all high-quality corporate bonds in that currency, so that the zone is actually not that relevant. But then the zone is relevant when it comes to government as to, well, what is the entity. So I think there's some wording needed, the amendments needed between the amendment and the basis for conclusions.
I think the staff takes that point on board. Tony?
excuse me. Echo the comments of others that if this doesn't address what government bond you should use, then I think we will get comments on it, and so I think we need to be prepared to try and answer them. The second question that I had is a practical issue that we do see not a lot, but reasonably often, is what do you do when a currency is pegged to another one, primarily to the US dollar. I think that's something that does come up in practice, and I wonder whether it's something that ought to be addressed at the same time as the amendment. So I agree with the proposal. I just wonder if we ought to address that as well, just to be clear that you shouldn't, if a currency is pegged, you shouldn't be using the rate for the US dollar. There should be some adjustment to reflect the country risk in the currency to which you're pegged.
For our new members, the difficulty that we had last time was the temptation to add just a little bit more to this was like pulling at a loose thread. And pretty soon, the sleeve on my shirt is at my shoulder because I pulled it and pulled it and pulled it and pulled it, and we couldn't define when to quit. So we said, no, we're going to keep this real narrow. And that inevitably leads to the frustration of saying, well, what government bond? I know what I think the answer is, that if I'm in Spain and I resort to the government bond, I use Spanish bonds, not German bonds, even though they're in the same currency. But I can see others that would take a different view. And the reason I would do that is because of the requirement for mutually compatible actuarial assumptions. But I can see others who would disagree, and that's not the point. Philippe?
Well, on the same topic, I mean, following up on Tony's point, that we would have questions if we limit the amendment to only currencies for corporates and not currencies versus government bonds. I'm sure we would have questions and it would come back. And the logics of saying you extend the reference area from country to currency for corporates, I think, should apply as well for governments, because governments use it as a proxy for corporates. And given the diversity of the ratings in Europe, from 10 years bond is from 1.50 spread to 10.6 Germany to Greece, 8 times more. I'm not sure we do a good service to our constituents by not answering the question and clarifying that we mean high-quality government bonds. The question is, what is high quality? I agree, not easy. But there is a rating. Now, government bonds are rated as well as corporates. France just lost its AAA. UK as well. AA. So every government is rated. So I think it would be really, if we want to do a good job, and that's the point, I think the board has to debate in terms of the scope of this amendment. It is based on the IFRIC recommendation, but I think the board can have a view of enlarging the amendment. I think the real issue is if you resort to government bonds, the idea is that it is because it was supposed to be high quality as a proxy for corporates. Now, the idea that you can use the Greek government bonds as a proxy for corporate high quality doesn't strike me as being very good, although it is same currency.
Well, taking it out of the Eurozone, and I had a conversation with the jurisdiction just a couple of weeks ago, in which they said, well, we have a lot of market in public bonds. We don't have what we consider to be a deep liquid market in high quality corporate bonds. And therefore, we resort to our government rate. Our government rate is double B. So if you're going to tell me I have to revert to a high quality government rate, and by the way, we're the only country with this currency, my currency, then you have to tell me additionally what I do if my currency or if my government bonds are not high quality. Been there, we did that, and we couldn't deal with it.
I agree on your point, but here the difference is that we have a currency zone with 25 countries, or not 15 countries. We say use currency zone corporate bonds, or use currency zone government bonds of high quality. And you have a choice. You can find high quality government bonds. In your case, you can't, in the same currency. The logic of extending from country to currency, I think, should apply as well to governments as it applies to corporates. And it's possible. There is no problem.
So if I'm a Spanish employer, despite the fact that my inflation assumptions and everything else are based on Spain, I ought to use German bonds. Well, but German bonds are the highest quality in Eurozone. Let's stipulate that. So I ought to use German government bonds, despite the fact that all of my assumptions are Spanish.
You should use exactly the German rate because there is an inflation difference, maybe 2 points. But you can derive from the German rate.
Yeah, we gave up on it.
You can. It's a level 2 measurement of what is high quality in your fact pattern.
Joanna?
I think that what you're talking about is, as Laurent says, a very hypothetical situation, because the whole point of this was to enable Spain or somewhere to go and actually use a high quality corporate bond that is in euros.
Mm-hmm.
And at the moment, there is a high quality deep market of euro bonds or bonds, corporate bonds in euros. If you get to the stage where that isn't the case, let's hope it's it's not a question that someone's going to come back to us today on, because, or in 6 months hopefully, or in a year or whatever, because there is a deep market in corporate bonds. And in fact, if there isn't, I have to admit, I fundamentally disagree with Philippe in terms of, at that point in time, if there are no high-quality corporate bonds in Europe, then we're in the crap. And quite frankly, I would revert to my Spanish government one or my German, you know, the country that I was in, because effectively it's actually saying the Eurozone has collapsed.
Andrew.
Thanks. Yeah, I think the issue the committee's been asked to fix is whether you look at corporate bonds on a currency or a country basis. The debate just tells me we're not going to fix the which government question if you are into government reversion, so why don't we just leave that alone and put the word country back before government bonds and clarify the question we were asked to clarify. I think without the conceptual underpinning, the government question's not going to get solved.
Scott, Martin, Marie, and then I'm going to call the question.
I can come up with situations where this issue of which government to look to might come up a little bit sooner. Ecuador, for reasons I'm not sure I understand, uses the U.S. dollar as the official currency. Kind of shocks me. But if you were trying to figure out, you know, which government bond rate to use in Ecuador, you might be worried. Do I use the Ecuador government rate or the U.S. government rate? Well, by putting in this guidance that says, worry first about corporates issued in the same currency, we make sure we never get to that second question. Mm-hmm. So I think putting in the guidance that says look to all corporates issued in the same currency takes a lot of the pressure off of which government, because we ought not get there very often. And hopefully maybe it buys us enough time that this project that we all in our fantasies think that the board is going to pick up on discount rates will be done. I don't believe that that will happen, but I only have a year left on this committee, so this will delay at least that long.
Okay, we're starting to retread. Martin, John, Corner, we're done.
Make it short. I agree with Scott.
but I don't, because if in a situation where you have U.S. dollars as a currency, then you might have a deep market in high-quality corporate bonds. But we just had 12 months ago a major debate in Australia about which government, because there's multiple levels of government, and federal and state governments both issue high-quality corporate bonds. So the issue of which government you're talking about is actually directly relevant, because there's no deep market in high-quality corporate bonds, or supposedly no deep market in high-quality corporate bonds. So I don't think it's an esoteric question. It might be
high-quality corporate bonds.
But the issue of which government and is actually a valid question in many jurisdictions with multiple layers of government.
Okay, Don and then Marie.
Yeah, I just wanted to say a couple of things. Turning to your point about the inflation assumptions and the discount rate that you use, one of the things that I understood from what I was told is that, if you were in Spain, for example, you wouldn't necessarily expect great inflation of salaries, and therefore that would sort of, you'd have to use a higher discount rate in order to match that. That actually there'd be very low inflation in that. So you're not getting a kind of compensating effect necessarily to bring it back to the Eurozone.
Point taken.
And then if I might add, that one thing Esma did say was that, to go back to what Marie said earlier, that one of their concerns is really to get something before the year end. And even if it's an exposure draft of an amendment, that's going to be very helpful, because what they're concerned about is that companies will switch to go to what Sandy was saying about, you know, whether there could be disclosures around that. But really, the important thing is the accounting and the measurement, and that if there's something there in a draft amendment, that they hope that would preempt any kind of optimistic or sort of changing accounting in order to give a better position. So thank you for all the efforts and everyone.
Marie?
Just to clarify, as I said in my letter, in fact, we have a problem with the difference of wording between 2005 and now, because the first agenda decision said it could be reasonably read as Eurozone or for a currency zone, for example, and after we said it should. So when we are trying to enforce this decision, people just object and say, okay, in 2005, but it's not so clear, it should be at the Eurozone the level. So that's why I think we need an amendment, and I agree it's the zone level and not the currency. And I also agree that it's an issue of our governments, but maybe it's another issue, so...
But you think the amendment, as included in the paper, solves your problem?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. My sense is that my sense is two things. There's general support for pegging this at the currency zone level. There are assorted reservations about whether or not we need to cycle back to the government bond issue. What we're talking about is taking a proposal to the board We have, I think, unless somebody raises an objection, consensus for the first half of the proposal, which is high quality means high quality within the currency zone. We have varying levels of uncertainty, including among some of our board observers, about whether we want to go, we want to suggest that the board go the next step, which is to say, well, what happens when you revert to government? Do you look at government bonds, the highest quality government bonds within a currency zone? And I think that's a question that we can put to the board, but that the committee, in my sense, has been unsuccessful in dealing with in previous meetings, and the board ought to know that. Is that an acceptable approach? Michael.
Yeah.
Please don't screw me up.
There is a point of detail that I do want us to be clear on. In the draft wording, we'd substituted the word countries with the word currencies. And I just want to check that we are clear that it's the word currencies rather than currency zone that we are proposing. Yes? Okay.
Okay. Good. Okay. You gentlemen have what you need?
Yes.
Thank you.
For the moment.